All right. Now we're going to put an image on the screen here, and it's going to show a plant. It's going to show a plant and how it grows from something small to something bigger. Now, how do you grow a plant? Does anyone know? Okay, you plant the seed in the soil, and then you water it. What's something else that a plant needs? The sunlight and food as well, right? And then it grows. Now, you can do things to help a plant grow. Can you make a plant grow? Can you take a seed in your hand and just make it grow? No. It actually needs time. The most important thing we can do to help a plant grow is nothing. You just have to sit and wait. And sometimes it takes weeks or even years for a plant to grow. We have to let the Lord do the growing of the plant. Now, the Lord tells us a story about this and how it's similar to spiritual life. Jesus said, "The kingdom of God is as if a man should scatter seed on the ground and should sleep by night and rise by day, and the seed should sprout and grow. He himself does not know how, for the earth yields crops by itself. First the blade, then the head, after that the full grain in the head. But when the grain ripens, immediately he puts in the sickle because the harvest has come." So Jesus is saying, a farmer throws his seeds on the ground, then he just sleeps and he waits. And the Lord is the one who makes the plant grow, and he has to wait until it's a full-grown plant, and then he can take those plants and he can eat them, or he can use them to feed other people. Now, the Lord is saying that life is like this a lot, where we do something, but then we have to wait with patience. Now, have you ever worked with your mom or dad to bake something or to cook something? Nice. And there's a time when you have to work really hard. You're putting all the ingredients together, right? What do you do when you put it into the oven? You wait. And you have to wait patiently. And it takes time. But eventually, it'll come out, and it's a nicely cooked piece of food. Another way this works is with growing older. As you're growing older, it's important that you learn things. And exactly. Exactly. You get bigger and bigger and bigger, and you have to learn things along the way. But can you get bigger? Can you grow 10 years in one day? No. You have to wait and be patient. And there's lots of things that are happening that you can't control that help you get bigger. Okay, so what does this have to do with being a good person? To become a better person, to grow, there are lots of things we have to do. But we also have to be very patient. Because becoming a better person, becoming a good person, doesn't all happen at once or in one day. Every day, we might try to be a better person and try to do things that are good. But some days it feels like those things are so small, they don't even matter. And we have to keep remembering, if I just do those little kind things, the Lord's going to help them grow. It's a little bit like if I take a jar and I say, I'm going to try to fill this jar one grain at a time. Okay. Do you think this is going to take quick or slow? Very slow, right? And we can think of each one of these things as a kind thing we do. One day, we decide, you know what, I'm going to share with my sister. The next day, you think, you know, I'm going to do some chores around the house. The next day, you think, ooh, I really want to get mad at someone, but I'm going to forgive them instead. Now, we might start to think, that's never going to grow, right? We have to be very patient. But if we keep doing that every day, one or two good things, the Lord is eventually going to fill us up with good things. And someday, we'll be that person we want to be, who loves doing good things for other people. And you might wake up one day and find out that some things that used to be hard are now easy. Maybe it used to be really hard to forgive someone. And now the Lord has grown you. And actually, it's really nice to forgive someone. It gives you lots of relief. And so now you're full with what the Lord's given you. Or maybe you really get frustrated with doing the dishes. Does anyone here like doing the dishes? No, I don't either, actually. But if you do them one day at a time, you just do the dishes, eventually you might wake up someday and realize, you know what, I really love helping mom and dad with the dishes. So it's by being patient and letting the Lord grow us, as we do little things one day at a time, that eventually he fills us up with his love and his goodness and will actually become the people we always wanted to become. Amen. How long, O Lord? Those are the words that were spoken by a group of people that John saw in the book of Revelation huddled under the altar. And they were waiting for justice to be brought upon their oppressors. They had been oppressed, they had been put down, they had been attacked. And they were asking the Lord, how long? How much longer? I imagine that many of us at times in life have found ourselves saying the same thing to the Lord. How long? How long until I get through this? How long until I can just stop worrying? How long until the anxious or the angry thoughts in my head just leave me alone? How long until there is peace on earth? Perhaps some of the hardest ones to face. How long will I keep being the same old me? How long will I be trapped in my own sin or selfishness? How long until I'll be able to fully express that love that I feel inside? How long until who I want to be is who I actually am? We can know that we really want to change, even as we continue to spiral back down into old patterns and remain unmoved in our habits. And I think the older we become, the more disheartening this can be for us. It's disheartening to see the same old issues come back again and again. We feel stuck. So what's going on when we feel stuck? When we really feel stuck, like something's not changing that I really want to change and I know should be different, are we failing spiritually? Does it mean we're not growing? We've done something wrong? And if we are still getting somewhere somehow, how does that work? How is the Lord working with us when we're in these places of being stuck or feeling unchanged, feeling like we actually can't move past what we're stuck with? Now, the Lord certainly understands our feeling of being stuck. There's a description in the teachings of the new church in which Swedenborg, who wrote those teachings down, he was allowed to meet some spirits in the other world who for a long time had been stuck in what is called the lower earth. That's a place in the spiritual world in which good-hearted people are allowed to struggle with some of their destructive and false beliefs, the beliefs that run contrary to the desire of their heart. So this is a place where people would go who have a good heart, they really want to be a good person, but they have some ideas that are getting in the way. And they need to work through those ideas before they can really get into heaven, before they can embrace heaven. And those spirits who were struggling with these things voiced their fears that they would remain there, trapped forever in an endless cycle. This is how it describes them. While I was there, I heard miserable wailings, in particular these, O God, have mercy on us, have mercy on us. And this went on for a long time. I was also allowed to talk to those wretched people, and to do so quite a lot. Most of all, they moaned about evil spirits longing and burning to do nothing else but torment them. In their despair, they said they were convinced that the torment would last forever. But I was allowed to comfort them. So these spirits thought that their torment would last forever. But what they couldn't see was that they were actually in the middle of a process that actually had a beginning and a middle and an end. And that process was one of growth that actually was allowing them to grow to get to a point where they could leave the torment behind. And without that process, they wouldn't actually get where they needed to be. So let's put ourselves in that same position. I'm sure many of us have been there. If you can, think of some evil, some flaw, some bad habit that you know that's destructive, that you've been working on for a long time, something that you see in yourself and you think, ooh, I don't like that. I don't think that's good. I think that's bad in me. But you've been battling it for a long time, maybe even years, maybe even since you were a teenager, you've noticed this trait that you have and you've wanted to be rid of. But you just seem to be stuck with it. I think most of us, when we're young and we first notice something bad, we're like, okay, well, this is a flaw in me. I'm going to change it. I'm going to stop being that. But then you hit your 30s or your 40s or your 50s or your 80s, and you feel like, actually, I'm still working on that exact same thing. I'm still making the same mistakes. And even when we do make progress with some of these things, where we feel like, no, I've beat it, I've got it conquered, I'm not that person anymore, it can still crop up again unexpectedly, and suddenly we're right back into those old habits. Sometimes we even go backwards, like we're worse than we ever were before. It can feel like we're taking one step forward and then two steps back. One step forward and then two steps back. And our natural inclination, when we feel this, when we think of evils like this, is to think, we are failing. This is terrible. Well, you know, you're not making any progress. Every step back is negating all the progress we had made up to that point. And it would be one thing if we weren't even trying, right? Like, okay, well, if you have some bad habit, you're not trying to break it, it's not that surprising that it doesn't change. But when you put a lot of effort into changing something, and then you keep getting sucked back into it, that is really disheartening and really frustrating. And so we can find ourselves saying, how long, O Lord? How long will this cycle continue? Can't you just make it stop? Can't you just change me? Can't you just make me a better person? And I can move on. I have so many other evils to work on. I have so many other selfish habits I need to get rid of. Please, can we just be done with this one and I can move on to something else? Now, in theory, yeah, the Lord could do that. The Lord could just say, I can tell you want to change. Done. You no longer have to deal with that flaw. You can work on something else. But if he did that, every time we came up against one of these challenges that we feel stuck in, you just said, all right, I'll fix that for you. We would never actually reach heaven. We'd never actually be saved from our evils. Now, that sounds very counterintuitive. How can you say, well, the Lord's going to save you from an evil, and if he did that, you wouldn't actually be saved from your evils? There is an essential thing we have to understand about how the Lord works. He knew what he was doing when he created us in such a way that we keep getting stuck with ourselves. That's not actually a problem with the system. He actually realized that for us to make progress, we actually have to have these experiences of getting stuck. That's a natural part of being a human being. Listen to this passage. This is from the Teachings of the New Church that talks about how the Lord treats the prayers of those who want a spiritual struggle or a temptation to come to an end before its time. It says, people in the throes of temptation, who take no action other than to send up prayers, do not realize that if their temptation were terminated before running its full course, their preparation for heaven would not be accomplished, and so they could not be saved. For this reason, also, little heed is paid to the prayers of those in the throes of temptation. For the Lord desires the end in view, which is the person's salvation. Now, I don't think this is saying the Lord doesn't care about your suffering. The Lord cares immensely about your pain or your suffering or whatever you're going through. But he ignores your request. If you're saying, Lord, take away all of this stuff, he ignores that. And he ignores it because he knows if he just fixed you with a snap of the finger, you'd never actually grow. We wouldn't have any investment in our spiritual life. It wouldn't be really a reflection of who we are. It wouldn't be a reflection of our own choices. It would just be the Lord snapping his finger. We could just change on a whim. And we'd be detached from choices. The choices wouldn't mean anything. They'd be meaningless. It is when we choose something in the face of failure, and we keep choosing it. We keep choosing, well, I failed again, but I'm gonna try again. And I'm going to keep doing that, not for the just one or two times, but for the 100th time and the 1,000th time. I made a mistake. I'm going to try again. Made a mistake. I'm going to try again. I made a mistake. Okay, I'm going to try again to deal with this. That's actually true growth happening there. There is actually something happening there. It's not overcoming evil that defines us. It's not being perfect that defines us. Our hearts, investing our minds, investing our body into a commitment. Turning ourselves against those evils. Saying, I don't want those and I'm going to try to resist those. That is what makes growth happen. And so it's kind of counterintuitive, but it's not actually growth. Growth isn't what happens when you've overcome evils. Growth is what's happening while you're trying to resist evils. And if you're putting if you're intentionally doing that and making that choice, even if you're failing, there's a kind of growth that's happening. There's a kind of progress that's happening. So the good news then is that fighting the same evil over and over again, you know, that evil's like, oh, I'm still this person since I was a teenager when I started working on this, and here I am in my 80s and I'm still working on it. Growth is happening. You have grown immensely because you've kept committing to being that better person. And every time you've committed, you've grown a little bit. But it's not growth we're always aware of. And this is where we come back to the parable that we used in the children's talk. It's a parable about a farmer and how his crops grow. Jesus said, "The kingdom of God is as if a man should scatter seed on the ground and should sleep by night and rise by day, and the seed should sprout and grow. He himself does not know how. For the earth yields crops by itself, first the blade, then the head, after that the full grain in the head. But when the grain ripens, immediately he puts in the sickle, because the harvest has come." Very interesting in this story. The farmer does have to do something. He has to scatter seeds. But he doesn't make the growth happen. I have some seeds here. This from a plant in my garden. Now, if I want this to grow into something, I will have to plant it. You know, I can't expect something to grow without a seed. But once it's planted, I can't actually like go into the seed and guide its growth and make it grow. I can't really do very much other than giving it a good environment. Only the Lord can grow the seed. I can do a few things with it. I can plant it, but I can't actually grow it myself. The Lord does that. Our regeneration, our spiritual rebirth, is the same way. We do have things we have to do. There are certain things that if we don't do those things, spiritual growth isn't going to happen. But the actual growth of our spirits takes place beneath the surface under the Lord's care. And we don't cause that growth directly. And in fact, what looks like being stuck and not moving forward does not mean that we're not growing. The Lord is growing our spirits and our souls from within. He's storing away love in our hearts. He's creating a new will, a new desire to do what is good. He's planting the seeds of our future. And like the farmer who plants his seeds, we're asleep to that inner growth, but eventually we'll be able to harvest. We'll actually be able to awaken to how far the Lord has brought us. Now again, that doesn't mean we don't have any role to play. It doesn't mean we just sit back and say, well, the Lord's growing me, so I'll sit back and do nothing. And there are two things that we actually need to do for growth to happen. And they're represented in the story of the farmer in the two things that he had to do. First, he had to plant the seeds. Second, he had to prepare for the harvest. And when we're stuck, when we feel like I can't do anything, I can't grow, I can't change, I can't be different, those are actually the two things we have to do as well. Planting the seeds is a symbol of planting truth in our minds. What that means is we always have to be looking for the next truth, the next right thing to come along, and storing it away in our tensions. What am I supposed to be doing? What's the right thing to do? How can I try to figure out what is right and what is good? Now, it's important to note, that's not going to get you unstuck. You're still going to be the selfish person you are right now. Sorry. And we're often left feeling like, well, I actually don't know what the right thing to do is. I'm struggling. I don't know. That's okay. You're just scattering seeds. I'm trying to figure out what the right thing is. That is the fodder that the Lord works with underneath the surface. It's not that you succeeded and you found exactly the right thing to do and you did it. It's just I have a mindset and an attitude of I'm going to try to find the right thing to do. That's planting seeds. The second thing we do is prepare for the harvest. As the parable said, when the grain ripens, he immediately puts in the sickle. He is ready at a moment's notice to put into action what the Lord has grown in his heart. And I think we can have some taste of this, and I hope you've had this experience before. If you've been going through something really hard for a long time, and you felt like none of your efforts were getting you anywhere, you feel like I'm stuck, it's like, why am I still trying? And then suddenly one little thing shifts, and suddenly a new perspective comes into place, or a new opportunity comes into place. And you look back and you see how all of those little efforts that seem to be getting you nowhere have now led you to a place where you actually can see what's right. You actually could make a different choice. You actually could shift your behavior. You know, for so long you haven't been able to, but because you put in those little efforts, you now have a new opportunity that you didn't have before. That's what this parable is talking about. If we keep planting all the little seeds, I'm going to try to do what's right, I'm going to try to find what's right, eventually it all comes together and we can move forward. But that only happens if we plant the seeds, and if we're ready for the harvest when it comes. Now, all that growth that gets us there, that's the Lord's doing. We don't have to worry about that. We don't have to make that happen. So I want to end now thinking about a psalm that also, like the parable, talks about sowing and reaping. And I think this psalm really brings home how this process can be a really joyful one because there is growth at the end of it, but can it also be a really painful one. This isn't easy, growing spiritually. This is from the 126th Psalm. It's actually what we read as our recitation. Those who sow in tears shall reap in joy. He who continually goes forth weeping, bearing seed for sowing, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. So picture this image of a man, a farmer, going out, maybe going out in a time of famine. Nothing's growing, there's no food, and there's no hope. And as he's spreading his seeds on the ground, maybe his efforts seem fruitless. They seem in vain. Is he even going to survive long enough for those tiny seeds to grow into a plant that he and his family can live on? And it might feel like there's no point. But he does it anyway. He's sowing his seeds. He's trusting. He has to do that if there's going to be a future. Without the planting of the seed, there's not going to be any chance of food. The same thing's true of us. If we want there to be some future, even when things seem really bleak, we've got to put that little effort in. I'm going to keep trying to find the right thing to do. Give the Lord something to grow into food for us, to sustain us. Yet for all that hardship, imagine the immense joy then when he reaps in that food that has grown. He actually can survive. He can live. The lesson of that psalm for us is that when we're stuck in a cycle of sin, of selfishness, of evil, we have to keep looking to the Lord, sowing in tears, knowing that the Lord has to have something to work with. We have to have some effort, some intention, something of, I want to be different. I'm trying. I'm putting in the effort. We will not be able to see how the Lord will use that trust in him to change us. We're not going to see the solution. It's not going to be like, oh, I tried, and now I see, oh, there's the end right there in sight. We just have to keep planting those seeds. And if we do that diligently, While we sleep, as it were, the Lord will be building a new heart and a new mind within us. And if we stay vigilant, we'll be ready when the opportunity comes, ready to reap with joy the new and good things that we can do, to receive with joy the change that actually does come to us, where we actually are a different person, a recreated person, a new person. The blessings of being able to actually no longer be constrained by the things that used to hold us back. And that's the promise of the psalm. If when things seem impossible, we just do those little things, the Lord is growing us. And if it takes a week, a month, a year, a decade for those to come to fruition, it still will have been worth it. By the time we get to that point, we'll look back and suddenly see the amazing ways the Lord has grown us. And so again, those who sow in tears shall reap in joy. He who continually goes forth weeping, bearing seed for sowing, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. Amen.